March 15, 1947, Newport Harbor, California. Walter and Beulah Overell are enjoying a night on their yacht, the Mary E., with their daughter Louise and her fiancé, George Gollum, better known as Bud. Around 11 p.m., Louise and Bud leave to go ashore looking to get hamburgers at a late-night burger joint. But when they return to the pier, the yacht was on fire and sinking. The Mary E. had exploded with Louise's parents on board. Was it an accident? A murder-suicide? Or was it an intentional murder on the part of their daughter, Louise, and the man she loved in so many ways? This is the story of Louise Overell and Bud Gollum, Murder on the Mary E. Hey, y'all, I'm Chris Calvert.
And I'm her husband, Rob Potter. Welcome to Hitched to Homicide.
For better or worse.
Till death do us part.
Everybody.
Yes, welcome, welcome, welcome. And for all of our friends in Finland.
Finland.
Tervetuloa, tervetuloa, tervetuloa.
Very nice. Well, wherever you're listening, be sure to like, rate, and review the podcast. You can subscribe wherever you're listening right this second.
Yep.
And if you're watching on YouTube, hit that subscribe button below.
Come join us.
You can find us on Instagram at Hitch to Homicide or on X at H2H_podcast.
Yes.
And if you just can't stand it and you got to have true crime every single day, please join our closed Facebook group, The In-Laws and Outlaws. Go to Facebook and type in H2H In-Laws and Outlaws. Answer a few questions and you are in.
You're in.
Go join. We're fun. I'm just telling you.
Just ask us.
We're fun. Just ask us. We're really good. We're getting loads of case suggestions and true crime listener stories. Keep them coming. And we really appreciate it when you guys just drop us a note. Very much we appreciate that.
Yes.
This case... it's from 1947. We got a war hero. We got sex, murder, mayhem, everything.
All the makings of a good true crime.
All the makings of a good true crime.
Yes.
Before we get started, let me thank some sources. The LA Times, Time Magazine, Murderpedia, Medium.com, The Daily News, The Register, the California State University Northridge University Library, and the Newport Harbor Murders Revisited by Brooks Wilson. I did read it, and I will provide a link to it and all the other sources in the show notes.
So awesome. All right. Well, you ready?
I am.
Let's do it.
Walter Edward Overell is born on August 24th, 1884 in Evansville, Indiana.
Yeah.
He possessed modest wealth in the beginning of his business career. He made his money from selling furniture, but then he made his fortune in real estate. He married Beulah Youngquist from Riverton, Iowa in the summer of 1914, June 2nd to be exact.
Okay.
And in 1929, these two had a daughter, Beulah Louise, who they would call Louise.
Louise.
Beulah and Walter did not want children.
Hmm.
And Louise was an oops baby when her mother was 39 years old.
That was scandalous back
then. In 1929, it sure was.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, her mom was 39 and her dad was in his 40s.
Well, I was an oops baby. My mom had me when she was 36. And
that was 1959.
Yeah, and that was scandalous back then.
Exactly.
Yeah. In fact, I'm going to tell this quick story. My mom, God-fearing, loving woman, wouldn't say a bad word about anything, sweetheart.
That's true.
Yep. And she wasn't feeling good, went to the doctor, our family doctor, and he ran tests on her and left the room, came back in, swear this is true. He said, well, the good news is there's, you know, you're not sick. There's nothing wrong with it. And you know, the other news is that you're pregnant. And my mom looked at the doctor and said, how did that happen? And he said, well, if we'd got to go there, we got more problems than you being pregnant.
We got bigger problems than you being pregnant, Norma Jean.
God love her.
But she's 39. Her dad's in his 40s.
Wow.
And there are those who will say that because she was kind of an unwanted child, she was also kind of a neglected kid.
That's too bad.
Walter was the president of the Federal Discount Corporation of California, which was a corporation headed up by well-known LA businessmen and, quote, able bankers, end quote. I found it all when it got incorporated in the newspaper. It was able bankers and LA businessmen.
What's an able banker?
It's an able banker.
I guess they can walk to work.
I guess they just have money. It's okay. A solvent bank.
All right.
But 44 of the 63 are allied with the furniture trade in this group.
Okay.
He was a deacon at their church in the Community Church of La Canada Valley. In June of 1935, Walter took over the J.M. Overall Furniture Company, located at 7th and Main Street in Los Angeles.
Okay.
The company opened in 1899 on Spring Street in L.A. and moved to 7th and Main in 1903. I believe it still sits in this location. That building is still in this location.
Wow.
Walter's wife, Beulah, she's a part of the Community Church of La Canada Valley, and she's also heavily involved in something called Children's Day and was the chairman of the Women's Guild. They were members of the Flint Ridge Country Club, and Walter was on the board of directors for the La Canada Valley Chamber of Commerce.
Okay.
So they're very social, very connected, very out in the social world of LA.
Sure.
In the 1920s, they built a home designed by L.G. Scher of Los Angeles and architect Cyril Bennett of Pasadena. Walter and Beulah moved in as the home's first owners, and he made his home a showplace of the family's furniture company.
Okay.
I actually looked up this house where they lived. It's still there. I saw where it was on the market. It was actually in the newspaper in the LA Times. It was it's on the National Register of Historic Places.
Okay.
It's a very historic home in LA and in that area.
Gotcha.
It's gorgeous. It's really pretty. Nice. But he used his house to showcase all his furniture.
Ah, okay.
Louise and Beulah, mother and daughter, appeared in a 1931 Welch's Grape Juice newspaper ad that mentioned, quote, the handsome overall estate in Flint Ridge, where they lived.
Wow.
I did read that there were rumors that Beulah had an affair with one of the developers of the small town of Flint Ridge, ex-Senator Frank Putnam Flint, who named a street after her, Beulah Drive.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I think that's still there, too.
Wow.
Senator Flint was a notorious philanderer, and it's likely that these two actually did have an affair, according to many sources.
Gotcha.
By the mid-40s, Walter is retiring, and he and Beulah are spending their time traveling, socializing, and on their 47-foot Chris Craft cabin cruiser.
Mm.
They kept it in the harbor in Newport, California. Walter had amassed a great fortune by post-World War II standards, $600,000, or $8.5 million in today's money.
That'll work.
Their daughter Louise is 17 at this time. It's 1947. She's a freshman at USC, and she's studying journalism. She actually skipped a grade in high school.
Hmm.
I don't think Louise had the happiest of childhoods, mostly placated by money. It seems, from everything I read, she was a very spoiled child growing up, and I even read that nobody really liked her.
Really?
Yeah. And according to one source, they had a birthday party for Louise, but nobody showed up.
Oops.
So the mom, not wanting her daughter to be traumatized, discreetly paid people to show up.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Louise never had a boyfriend in high school. She was said to have had a really sharp tongue and a very quick wit.
Hmm.
She never allowed the boys to make fun of her because she would beat them to the punch. Like, she didn't let them make fun of her or say mean things to her. She would do it first.
Right.
And she's not a beautiful girl by 1947 standards, but, you know, beauty's in the eye of the beholder.
Sure.
So I don't know. I hate to say that someone's beautiful or not beautiful, but according to the newspapers, she wasn't very beautiful.
Well, beauty's in the eye of the beholder,
exactly.
Like you said, and you proved that by marrying me.
In 1947, it's just 2 years after World War II ended, and people were really trying to get their lives back together. Friends of the Overells, the Gollums, or Mrs. Wilhelmina Rector Gollum Stomel, was friends with Louise's mother, Beulah. And during World War II, Wilhelmina's son, George, who they called Bud, was serving in the Navy as a radio man. And Louise was apparently encouraged to write to Bud while he's in the war. And she did.
Okay.
And when he came home, he and Louise began dating. And then somewhere in there, Bud took Louise to bed and she was done for.
Uh-oh.
Hook, line, and sinker.
Yep. Take me to bed or lose me forever. Thank you, Goose.
Exactly. They looked at rings and Bud picked one out and asked Louise to marry him. Now, that's all fine and well, but according to Bud's friends, he actually handpicked Louise because of her money. Don't know if that's true or not. His family wasn't poor by any stretch of the imagination. He came from a good family, maybe just not a family worth $8.5 million.
I should already say that.
Yeah. But Beulah Louise Overell, she's 17 years old. She's 5'6", weighs 155 pounds. She has brown hair. She was described in the Los Angeles Times as, quote, the beautiful blonde heiress. She's also described as a pudgy, unattractive girl. Take your pick.
Wow.
She's an only child. She lived with her grandmother near the University of Southern California when she started school there, right there near the campus. Mm-hmm. And she was majoring in journalism. And classmates described her at USC. They said that she was pretty stoic and undemonstrative. Okay. She was just, you know, kind of flew under the radar.
Yeah.
George Bud Gollum was 21 years old. He's 6'2", weighs 220 pounds, and he is handsome in the, quote, style of the times, end quote.
Whatever that means.
He's a good-looking kid.
Okay.
He returned a Pacific War hero. He had received the Bronze Star for bravery during the Battle of the Leyte Gulf.
Wow.
And was pre-med at Los Angeles City College.
My dad was in that battle.
I know he was. He was. I knew you'd like that part.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Now, Louise's mother at one point even called Bud's mom and said, quote, I'm so glad, my dear, that the son of one of my oldest friends is interested in my daughter, end quote. Well, he's interested, all right. Hang on to your whatevers.
I'm hanging on to whatever I can.
Beulah used to call Wilhelmina and ask if it would be okay for Bud to keep Louise company in their Flint Ridge house while she and Walter went out. And Wilhelmina, in kind, would call and see if Louise could stay at their house a little later or come over on Bud's 21st birthday. And a whole lot of shaking was going on during these little visits. Just telling you now.
If this truck is rocking, don't bother knocking.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
But when these two decided to get married, there are loads of sources that said her parents weren't too pleased about it.
Really?
But a wedding date was planned for April 30th, 1948, when Louise would be 18 years old, and her parents couldn't stop her.
Right.
Her parents allegedly told her, you marry him, we will cut you off financially.
Whoa. See ya.
And I also read that the Overalls were said to have had reservations about the marriage because of Louise's age. But they said they liked Bud and had consented on the condition for them to get married as long as both of them finished college.
Gotcha.
And Louise had told people they planned to get a house trailer and live in a central spot near both of the campuses, USC and LA City.
Hmm. While they were going to college.
Right. They were going to, get married and finish college together.
Okay. That makes sense.
But Louise was all about Bud. And Bud was a little bossy and a bit sadistic in the bedroom with Louise. And you can only think if this is the only man she's ever had sex with, which it is.
Yeah.
She thinks this is what's supposed to happen in the bedroom.
Gotcha.
And he, of course, had been with other women. Still, Louise and Bud spent all their time together and with her parents. And on March 15th, 1947, around 11 p.m., 17-year-old Louise and her sweetheart Bud are on her parents' yacht, the Mary E., which was moored in Newport Harbor in California.
Okay.
At just around 11 p.m., Louise and Bud leave the yacht, going ashore to get hamburgers at a late night burger joint.
All right.
Probably not In-N-Out Burger. That is my favorite.
It is good.
Everybody knows. I fly into the West Coast. I have people meet me at the airport with a burger from In-N-Out. They know how much I love it.
Yeah, my top three is Shake Shack, number three.
Okay.
In-N-Out Burger, number two.
Yeah. Five Guys, number one.
No, Skyline Chili. I know it's not a burger, but it's still number one.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
But while these two are getting burgers, the Mary E. explodes. And when they get back to the harbor, they see Louise's parents' boat is smoldering and sinking.
Wow.
A guy named F.E. Moore, he's a retired L.A. firefighter, was first on the scene because his boat was moored 75 feet away.
Oh, wow.
And everybody's out looking for survivors, including Louise and Bud when they make it back. She's frantically calling out to her parents while the ship is sinking. They sent Louise and Bud away. They were like, get these kids out of here. And they went back to Louise's parents' home, where Bud said he stayed up all night holding Louise's hands as she cried.
Wow.
But the next morning, a neighbor who came over said these two were laughing and they were ransacking Beulah's room and taking her furs out of a vault.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm. So which one is it?
Doesn't look good.
Now, the bodies couldn't be found until later when the Coast Guard towed the Mary E. to shallow water. And initial reports called it an accident. The kind of accident that sometimes happens in boats with gas motors. And the explosion blew two holes in the hull of the boat. It shattered decks and bulkheads and was heard over a mile away.
And that doesn't sound like a gasoline engine explosion.
It's because it's not.
Okay.
The force of the blast had torn both of the victims' bodies apart. Walter's right leg had been shattered and a plank was driven through his back. He was actually impaled.
Ugh.
And Beulah's head had been crushed.
Wow.
Now, on the following Wednesday, March 19th, Louise and Bud returned to Newport Beach to get the family's car from the police. And Newport Beach Police Chief H.R. Hodgkinson told them, quote, I'm glad you dropped in. Saves me the trouble going after you, end
Uh-oh.
Quote.
Uh-oh.
Louise and Bud were placed under arrest on suspicion of murder.
Wow.
Earlier that day, Orange County Sheriff James Music had announced his evidence to the press. 31 unexploded sticks of Trojan brand dynamite were found on board the Mary E.
Wow.
Along with detonators, links of electrical wire and adhesive tape, and an alarm clock rigged as the timing device. Its hands stopped at 11:46 p.m., the moment of the explosion.
Wow.
I've got pictures of this dynamite rigged to this clock.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like something Wile E. Coyote put together.
Acme.
I'm not even kidding you. Wow. I looked at that picture and I was like, where's the coyote? Where's the Roadrunner? And that's exactly what it looks like.
Wow.
The sheriff speculated, here we go, that the explosive had been rigged by an amateur who had not realized that each dynamite stick required its own individual blasting cap in order for it to explode.
Okay.
Had all the sticks of dynamite actually exploded, the blast would have totally destroyed the vessel, the ship would have been gone, the bodies would have been gone, there would have been no evidence.
Right.
So the police believe that somebody, probably Bud, bludgeoned Walter and Beulah aboard their cruiser in Newport Bay and blew up the boat and Louise's parents with it by a charge of dynamite rigged to an alarm clock.
Wow.
And from the moment the cops picked up Louise and Bud, the Los Angeles newspapers had a field day.
I'm sure they did.
As they investigate the deaths, here's what they find. Louise tells police, when they question her, that the day before her parents died, she and Bud drove to Chatsworth and bought dynamite at the request of her father, Walter.
Okay.
But when they question Bud about this, he tells them, yeah, we bought it, But I don't know why Walter asked for us to buy it.
Okay.
We just did. We did as we were told.
Sure.
In addition to the 31 sticks of unexploded dynamite on the boat, the exploded dynamite had been set off by a clock attached to the boat's battery. The bulkhead was splintered. And according to newspaper reports, authorities also learned that Louise's parents were bitterly opposed to their daughter's marriage plans.
Doesn't look good.
And authorities think that the parents could have been beaten before the boat explosion. I tell you this because their autopsies are so so much of this is botched, it's crazy.
Really?
Now, a grand jury indicted Louise and Bud, and Louise's relatives hired a man named Otto Jacobs, a veteran attorney who by that time had handled like 80 other major crime cases, including 8 murder cases, and he had won every single one of them.
Wow.
He had an aide, Z.B. West. Bud was represented by S.B. Kaufman, and the prosecution, who are just a band of idiots in this case, they decide we're going to try Louise and Bud together.
Yeah.
Big mistake.
Big.
Huge. Police start asking around. They talk to the housekeeper about an alarm clock in Louise's room. It apparently had failed a couple of times, making Louise late. And Bud, ever thoughtful Bud, mm-hmm. bought her an electric alarm clock. And the other one is never seen again.
Just happened to disappear.
Just happened to disappear.
Yeah.
Chief R.R. Hodgkinson gets the keys to Bud's car, a 1946 Pontiac coupe. It's parked at the steel plant operated by Louise's uncle, Emanuel Youngquist, where they went through the car. And they found tape, wire, and some of it was attached to blood-stained clothing.
Oh, wow.
Now, Bud and Louise tell different stories about the blood-stained clothes. He says they were at the beach about a week before the explosion, and he and Louise were joking around, and he threw seaweed on her, and she squealed. He picked her up, and she hit her face on his back and got a nosebleed. Louise tells police that she did have a nosebleed, but it was months before her parents were killed in the explosion. Now, the medical exams were shoddy at best. The bodies were in bad shape. They buried them only to exhume them one more time. At the funeral, people didn't think Louise acted as she should. They didn't think she was grieving enough.
Right.
And I always take exception to this because grief is personal, but they were saying she wasn't acting right, like right. she wasn't sad enough.
Right.
When the prosecution wanted a third post-mortem exam, the family put their foot down. But here's what they did find in the second one. They found multiple skull fractures delivered by the same implement in both bodies. But the coroner couldn't determine whether the fractures had been the cause of their death, even though it seemed like it all corresponded with a ball-peen hammer, a ball-peen hammer that they found on board the Mary E.
Oh, really?
The autopsy report further stated that there was no water in the lungs of the victims.
Okay.
Indicating that they had to have died prior to the sinking of the vessel.
Right.
But they could have been killed by the blast.
Sure, of course.
But they still found this ball-peen hammer in the bathroom of the front cabin. They also said it could have been caused by a stanchion that held the lifeboat in place. But they don't really know. And everything is circumstantial. Everything is circumstantial.
Sure.
The most incriminating evidence, of course, was that Bud and Louise were seen buying dynamite. And what they find out is they didn't just buy dynamite once. They bought it twice.
Ooh.
Before the explosion of this yacht.
They didn't think to tell them that.
I think they were trying to keep everything close. They were playing their cards close to the vest.
Sure. Yeah, but when you say, well, my dad told us to go buy dynamite.
Yeah. He didn't tell him to buy it twice.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
There was a receipt for 50 sticks of dynamite purchased from the Trojan Powder Company in Chatsworth, California. The receipt was signed not by Bud or Louise, but by an R.L. Standish of 206 West Boulevard in Palmdale. And they try to say, the authorities try to say, that the name, even though it's a different name, they say it's Bud's handwriting.
Yeah.
Now, whether that's true or not, who knows?
Right.
They bring in the guy who sold them the dynamite. He comes in and he's like, They show him pictures of Bud and Louise, and they're like, is this the couple who bought the dynamite? And he can't say for sure. He's like, I don't know if it's them. It could be. It might not be.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Wow.
And even though this case today would have been open and shut, it's just not.
Yeah. Well, records weren't as stringent as they are today.
For sure. But I'm telling you, it's Wile E. Coyote, the Roadrunner, and the Keystone Cops.
Wow.
So the prosecution has that Walter and Bueller were killed by blunt force that was unlikely to have been caused by the explosion. They're dead when the explosion happens and the boat floods. Louise and Bud were with them. They're the only ones with them prior to the explosion. They purchased the dynamite on two separate occasions, and the most recent taking place on the day before Louise's parents die. The other part that they have is that Louise's father had threatened to cut her off if she married Bud.
Right.
So it should be an easy win.
Yeah.
They had motive.
Right.
They had weapons. They had opportunity, right?
Sure.
The trifecta.
Yeah.
After Bud and Louise are arrested and kept in jail, which from everything I read was pretty cushy, by the way, she had knitting needles and was making Bud socks while they were apart.
So she had two shanks with her in prison. Good
Lord.
Can
you imagine saying, here's some knitting needles, some knitting needles in prison these days?
Yeah. And don't run with them.
Yeah. She's making socks. I read like where she, there are all kinds of letters that they send back and forth. We're going to talk about that. But, you know, she was like, I'm working on the purple ones today. You know, and he's like, I'm wearing the blue socks. And his mom was bringing her yarn. She was darning things, you know, for the prison guards. It's just.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a little bit. Chicago.
Yeah,
with,
I was going to say.
Yeah, the mama, the matron, and yeah.
Yeah.
But knitting is not all they're doing while they're apart. These two made friends with the guards, or so they thought. And they started passing notes back and forth. And when they do this, they think because they're friends with these guards, it's going to remain private.
Sure.
Well, they would open them and copy them before they passed them along. It didn't remain private, and this trial was among the last spectacular murder trials of the age of print media, and they couldn't wait to print these letters.
I'm sure.
The story of how Louise's parents died, the fact that she was in love with Bud, and that they were in jail for the murder of her parents, this story is carried in the LA Times, the LA Examiner, which is the Hearst paper, which loved to focus on the personal angle.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It was also featured in the New York Times, Life magazine, you name it.
Gee whiz.
It was a rag journalist dream. It's the heiress of the crime, the love story between Bud and Louise, and the opportunity to give their readers a glimpse into the lives and scandals of the rich, the lifestyles of the rich and famous.
Yeah, the only reason it wasn't in the National Enquirer is because the National Enquirer wasn't around.
Exactly. Now, if Louise's parents didn't like Bud, after their deaths, you can quite imagine that her family really didn't like Bud.
I can imagine.
They rallied around Louise. They hired her the best defense guy in the business, Otto Jacobs. And Otto wants her to distance herself from Bud as much as she can. He has no idea these love notes are going back and forth. So she's in love. The letters are getting passed back and forth. Some of them, I'm telling you, even in 2024, would make you blush a little bit.
Really?
Oh, yes.
Wow.
I'm just going to give you a little sample. None of the dirty ones.
All right. The Harlequin version.
Yeah.
Okay.
Quote, I wish we were in our own home alone. This is Bud to Louise, by the way.
Right.
That's why I don't want to have a housekeeping couple in a house of ours. We would not be able to run around the house naked. We would not be able to make unreserved love anywhere, anytime, end quote.
Go, Bud.
He also tells her that after everything's over, he intended to be, quote, real masculine, end quote. This after they're married. And he begged her to write to him in the same vein in which he addressed her, which was very sexy and very explicit.
Okay.
His love for her, he admitted, was based on sex. Quote, but I think the emotions and acts of sex are the most beautiful and necessary of any possessed by human beings. In the word sex, I include all of the thoughts I have of you. My love is sex. I'm not a disciple of Freud. I just think that all emotions and feelings between two people, between us, is sexual, but sexual in a way that is good and healthy and will, as the years pass, strengthen our lives together. End quote.
So basically what he's saying is it's all about sex.
Yeah, and he's a little bit of a dominant to her submissive in right. these letters because he gets really explicit about what he wants to do to her. And I'm like, am I reading 50 Shades of Grey from 1947 and 1948?
Yeah.
Because it's really a lot like that.
Wow.
Louise wrote a letter where she ended it, quote, I simply cannot explain how I feel toward you. It is sufficient to say that you are my whole and only interest in life. I dream of your big, beautiful chest. Nobody else has a beautiful and as hairy a chest as you, end quote.
Jeez. Here, I just threw up on my mouth a little bit.
There's lots more, of course, that right. they can't print in the newspapers.
Yeah.
And by the time these two go to trial, the letters have been leaked to the press. So everyone knew about them. Mm-hmm. But the jury, who had been sequestered, they did not.
Okay.
And on the day when the jury was going to be shown all the salacious letters, mm-hmm. the courthouse was packed. You couldn't fit them in with a shoehorn.
Wow.
Because these people thought they're going to read these letters out loud.
Right.
But they handed the letters to the jury of six men and six women to read silently to themselves. And they did read how they'd given pet names for body parts.
Wow.
He would write to her explicitly how Junior missed Butch.
Oh, oh, my God. Oh, wow.
Junior Mrs. Butch.
Gee whiz. I don't even want to know how they came up with that.
Oh, so he wrote about Junior and Butch and all the things he wanted to do to her.
Gee.
He begs her to write to him a sex story, but she doesn't. And as time wears on and Louise's family sees these letters, they get together. The whole family gets together and
right.
they're like, it's time for damage control.
Yeah.
We've got to do damage control.
Yep.
They tell Louise that Bud was only after her money, that she needs to distance herself from him. Otto Jacobs, her attorney, even gets Louise bail. Like, she could get out on $50,000, but they decide not to bail her out for fear of how it might look to the jury.
Mm.
But for 60 days, these two sit in jail exchanging love letters, mostly on Bud's side. His were like 12... sometimes 12 pages long.
Wow.
Yeah. And I do think he wanted to marry her for her money, but he liked that she was a virgin when he met her, and his idea of sex was not her idea of sex. Mm-hmm. Everything that he did was now how she thought sex was supposed to be.
Sure.
And according to everything I read, before Walter and Beulah's death, these two were at it like rabbits all the time.
Wow.
I think Louise's parents believed it was hinky that this handsome war hero who was pre-med and could have his pick of women in Los Angeles set his sights on their daughter, who wasn't a rare beauty. Of course, beauty's in the eye of the beholder.
Mm-hmm.
But her parents are like, why Louise?
Yeah.
It had to be because of the money.
It's kind of like Shallow Hal.
Yes. And I think they wanted to see if they told Louise she would be cut off. Louise, we'll cut you off if you marry him. If Bud would still want to marry her. Mm-hmm. That's just my opinion.
Yeah.
But maybe it was a test, right?
Right.
Their trial began on May 26, 1947 and lasted 133 days.
Good grief.
People across the country were obsessed with this trial, which became the longest and most expensive trial in California history at that
really?
Time.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. It was broadcast on the radio and reported in all the biggest newspapers, and the public was hooked on every single salacious detail. They wanted to know it all.
Well, there wasn't football during that time.
Prosecutor Eugene Williams told a packed courtroom, quote, The defendants enjoyed an illicit, perverted, sadistic sexual passion amounting almost to frenzy. Lust, greed, frustration. Ladies and gentlemen, these are the raw materials of which murders are made, end quote.
Wow.
And it seemed like a slam dunk for the prosecution, right?
Yeah.
Louise had motive. She's the sole heir of her parents' fortune.
Right.
Bud had a trunk full of dynamite. And Walter, apparently, her dad, didn't have the kind of enemies who would even think about orchestrating something like this,
right,
or were looking to kill him.
Sure.
The only person they thought was really looking to off him was his daughter.
Yeah.
But the prosecution made some critical blunders, not the least of which was to try Bud and Louise together and not separately.
Right.
And that would prove to be a huge mistake, a fantastic mistake.
Okay.
But it wasn't the only one. Prosecutors contended that specific screws used in the detonation device were exceptionally rare, and they had found some of those screws in Bud's car. So the next day, the defense team goes to a local hardware store. They find the screws pretty easily. They walk into the courtroom, and they're like, oh, you mean these screws? And they just tossed them in the floor.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Wow. Oops.
So it was very much a showman. It was a showman's trial.
Sure.
The defense argued that Bud purchased the dynamite at Walter's request.
Right.
Why? Well, they contend that Walter was depressed. He was depressed enough over his deteriorating finances that the explosion was the result of an accident of suicidal tampering with dynamite.
Okay.
So did Walter have a death wish? Was it a murder-suicide? He took his wife with him? One news report quoted Bud as saying he bought the dynamite so Walter could remove tree stumps at his estate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're kind of all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, pick a story, any of them.
But after all the salacious love letters and even one with a map on how to break out of jail together, the jury came back after 133 days with a verdict of...
guilty?
Not guilty.
Really?
Wow. And the court watchers exploded into applause.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Insurance money based on a double indemnity claim resulted in a $140,000 award. Now, afterwards, many of the jurors said they all believed that Bud and Louise had done it.
Okay.
But they felt that Bud acted like a Svengali over her, and they wanted to give her a lesser sentence.
Ah.
But they were tried together,
yep,
and the charges against them didn't allow for individual verdicts.
Right.
So the jury was stuck.
Yeah. They painted them into a corner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they didn't want to throw them both in prison for the rest of their lives.
Wow.
Because they thought it was mostly him orchestrating. And he had such a power over her that she did whatever, she went along with whatever.
Sure.
It was later discovered that the initial jury vote was 11-1 to convict.
Oh, wow. Are you serious?
But by the time the trial was over, Bud and Louise were no longer planning wedded bliss and the rest of their lives together. At least Louise wasn't. Her family had kind of gotten to her.
Mm-hmm.
When they left the courthouse, reporters asked her if she was going to get married, and she went, ha! No.
Wow.
She scoffed and said no, so I just acted it out for you.
That was good.
Are you going to marry Bo? Ha! No. And when they asked Bud, he said something like, that remains to be seen.
Don't count on it, Bud.
The Mary E., the yacht, was actually put on display in Long Beach as a tourist attraction.
Really?
150,000 people went through the death ship. Admission was 50 cents. Then it was 25 cents. Then it was 15 cents.
Man.
Time magazine reported that the overall estate was in reality, quote, valued in probate at $309,997, end quote.
Okay.
And maybe Louise didn't know that. Maybe she didn't realize that her dad wasn't worth what she thought he was.
Right.
The house and its contents, including all the furnishings, were sold at auction for $56,000, or in today's money, about $775,000.
Wow.
But there were bills to be paid and attorney's fees.
Sure.
And according to the LA Times, the now single heiress began drawing $500 per month on her inheritance and $300 each month from the insurance policy. Mm. Which I read that, but in 2024, that's about $10,500 a month for her to live on.
That'd work.
Yeah. Her total inheritance amounted to $70,000 or about $1 million in 2024, which is a far cry from the 8.5 her parents were supposed to be worth, right?
Yeah.
2 years later, and at the age of 20, Louise decided she would get married, but not to Bud Gollum. Mm. The Los Angeles Times reported her upcoming nuptials to Robert Cannon, age 28. A Los Angeles cop. Mm. She made a comment and was quoted as saying, there would be no honeymoon, quote, a ridiculous custom, end quote.
Okay.
That marriage failed after only 2 years. Then she married Joseph Kuiman, a barkeeper in Las Vegas in 1953. That marriage would also fail. But by this time, Louise was drinking heavily and under the care of a psychiatrist. Mm. By age 36, just 18 years after her parents died, she was found naked on her bed, two empty vodka bottles nearby, covered in bruises, with a fully loaded .22 rifle at her feet. Her obituary in the LA Times reported that her husband said she was, quote, always falling down, end quote. That was his explanation for the bruises. She died of alcohol poisoning.
Wow.
George, Bud Gollum, he tried to create a new life for himself. That is, after he stole a car and spent 9 months in jail in Georgia. Apparently, he was with the wrong person at the wrong time in the wrong place.
Yeah, yeah.
After that, he vanished from sight. He became a professor, so he claimed, but no one ever knew what school he taught at. He didn't go to med school. He kind of said that the trial killed that for him.
Yeah.
In 1988, the LA Times tracked him down and wrote a short article on the 40th anniversary of the crime.
Okay.
Bud was living near Lake Tahoe and told the reporter over the phone he was involved in real estate speculation. He claimed to have a daughter and a son, but he had been separated from his wife of 20 years. George Bud Gollum died in February 2009 in Wasilla, Alaska. Mm. He was 83.
Wow.
So, was Louise a spoiled rich kid who finagled Bud into her scheme to kill her parents and inherit a fortune?
Yes.
Was Bud the mastermind who saw opportunity in this young, naive, wealthy girl?
Yes.
Did Walter and Beulah fail as parents?
Yes.
And by telling her that she couldn't marry this guy, did they set in motion a string of events that led to their own deaths?
Let me say it again. Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
The truth of that night's never going to be known because all four are dead and they took the answers with them to the grave.
Right.
The letters, the 50 Shades of Grey letters are out there. I can post some of them in the in-laws and outlaws. I'm just telling you.
Yeah, a little steamy.
Very steamy. And, you know, I write romance novels from time to time. They're pretty steamy. Yeah. They're elementary school steamy. if you know what I mean.
They're minus the little box mark yes or no.
Yeah. But that is the salacious and tragic story of Walter and Beulah Overall, their daughter Louise and her fiancé Bud. And that's all I have to say about that. She is only one, but what if one is all that's needed? Hospice nurse Indy Luce has fallen in love. After caring for billionaire Louis Thornberry until his final breath, she's now engaged to marry the heir apparent of the global tech empire, David Thornberry. But as the divinely marked Indy packs up her old life to begin anew, a sacred promise comes back to haunt her with a vengeance. As an unrelenting spiritual battle unfolds in the shadows, the descendants of those like Indy find themselves persistently lured and ensnared as a relentless surge of evil becomes an unstoppable force. With malevolent entities following her every step, what Indy doesn't know about her family's sacred covenant could tip the scales of good and evil. the follow-up to the paranormal suspense novel Lead Me From Temptation, and book two of the Divine Darkness series Deliver Me From Evil is now available March 29th, 2024, wherever you buy or download books, or go to chriscalvert.com. If evil prowls seeking someone to devour, can one woman seek and save that which is lost?
Yeah, I mean, come on. There was so much evidence there. They did it. They set it up. I mean, she was probably the mastermind behind it.
Well, there are all kinds of occasions where he talked about how angry he felt, inferior, because her parents weren't going to allow this marriage to happen. So he felt very inferior. He wasn't good enough.
Right.
And because of that, he hated Louise's parents. Mm. He hated Walter and Beulah, and he said it a lot. And she's 17 years old.
Yeah.
So, of course, she's like, yeah, I hate my parents.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, what he said.
Exactly what he said.
Wow.
But he was pretty overbearing with her. I mean, especially in the bedroom.
Yeah.
I mean, he liked to bruise her when they would get together or be together before they had to go in front of the jury or the court or go into the courtroom. If he could get near her, he would pinch her or grab her or try to get his hand up her skirt. And
oh, wow.
Yeah. I think they got in over their head, got a little too big for their britches, and it didn't turn out the way they wanted.
Yeah.
And then once her family is like, we got to go into damage control, which means you got to get rid of him.
Yeah.
And she did.
Yep. She did. Well, let's get rid of them and get some of these with a little bless your heart. All right, this first one I'm calling, he really didn't think this all the way through.
That's me most days. It seemed like a good idea at the time.
Exactly. A 33-year-old man in Florida got arrested on Friday after he called the cops and said a customer stole $10 from him.
Okay.
Yeah. According to this report, Eric Thomas called officers to report a theft of $10. Now, when they arrived, he had 11 baggies of pot in his possession, and confess that the person who stole the 10 bucks was there to buy pot.
I'm a weed dealer.
Yep.
And this dime bag got away from me.
Yeah. And of course, both of those are no-nos in Florida. And during a post-arrest search, cops found two baggies of cocaine in his wallet.
Oh.
Yep. He was arrested and charged with a pair of drug felonies and booked into county jail.
Be careful why you call the police.
That's it. That's it. All right. Number two. Bring out your dad.
One of my favorite movies and Broadway shows.
Exactly. North Carolina's own Melvin MD is back in police custody after allegedly and unsuccessfully trying to fake his own death.
Oh, bless his heart.
Yep. According to reports, on August 7th, police received a call from MD's son saying his dad had fallen overboard in a kayak.
Oh, okay.
And drowned.
Okay.
Sound familiar?
It does.
Yeah. That was the same day that MD was due in court to answer for statutory rape charges.
Isn't that just convenient?
Yeah. Cops suspected it was a hoax, but went along with the story while they searched for evidence of a drowning and posted updates on the rescue and frantic search for MD's body. Why did the police think it was all a ruse? Well, MD was still wearing his ankle monitor.
Oh, my gosh.
From his previous arrest. And on the day of his drowning, he was really at Walmart buying two prepaid phones.
Oh, my gosh.
He was busted. And
what? Yeah. How do these? Well, okay. I was going to say, how do these people? Yeah. But that's how.
Yeah.
Never mind.
Yeah.
They just are.
All right. Number three. And finally, don't mind us. Two idiots in Florida stole an old lady's wallet at Walmart and used her credit card to buy $2,000 worth of stuff.
That was very old radio guy. Yeah. Don't mind us.
Yeah, I'm pretty good at that.
You are very good at
it. Now, they bought $2,000 worth of stuff. Then they got arrested when they came back the next day, while cops were still there investigating the theft.
The day before.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, you can't make that up. Mm-hmm. Anyway, they were busted because they were identified and they're in jail.
If brains were leather, wouldn't have enough to saddle a June bug.
Not at all. So there you go. There's your bless your heart.
Well, if you have a bless your heart, or you know somebody's heart who needs blessing, Go to hitchtohomicide.com where there's a pull-down menu, and you can also suggest a case.
Please do.
And while you're there, if you have your own true crime story you want to share with us, fill out that form and send it off to us as well.
Yeah.
That's my amazing husband out there.
And that's my beautiful ride in the booth.
Join us next time on Hitch to Homicide.
Bye, y'all.